something you use dozens of times a day. But one of the people behind the original like button actually went to university in Norfolk after graduating from the UEA. Bob Goodson went on to found Silicon Valley-based company Quid, and it was there he became one of the people behind the early like button. Now, he's returning to the university as a special guest lecturer, and has even found the time to come join me in the studio this afternoon. Bob, hi.
Hi, Kayleigh. Good to be here.
Oh, and I mean, what an incredible story. And you know, to sort of, it's quite the change of scenery, really. Isn't it sort of going from Norfolk to Silicon Valley? So how did this all come about?
Yeah, sometimes I ask myself that. after UEA, I was living in Oxford for a couple of years, and I attended a talk where some of the founders of PayPal had been speaking, and I was fortunate to meet one of them afterwards. And I've been building some, like, an early social network while I was at Oxford, about 4 years before Facebook came out. And we got chatting, and I ultimately got a job offer. So I left university early, didn't finish that degree, and headed to San Francisco in my late 20s.
And what was that like? Because, I mean, that as an experience at the best of times, but to sort of come from sort of, you know, literally kind of just say, oh no, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to give it a go. What was that like when you actually got there?
I must say, the only advice I had from friends and colleagues was that this was a really bad idea. You know, I had a full scholarship and I hadn't finished the degree. And, you know, right after the crash of the late 90s for the web, it was there really wasn't much activity, and there were a lot of failed companies. And so it was kind of an odd time to be getting into the web. And so anyone that did weigh in and give advice was like, I think this is a really bad move. You're going to work for an internet company in the early 2000s. But it just seemed the right thing for me to do. And as I'd studied literature and history at UEA, and I'd studied the invention of the print press, and what an incredible innovation that was when we went from having to write books by hand to when we could make them with a machine. Mm-hmm. And suddenly books became affordable for the general public, and it massively increased literacy rates, for example. Before the print press, only 5% of people in England could read. And after the print press, that number went up massively. And that, of course, then changed society, changed democracy. And I saw with the early web, I felt like something similar was happening again. You know, it's 500 years later, but it was this pattern of like a completely new way to create information, share information, make learning more accessible. And that was my feeling, that I wanted to play some small part in what was happening.
And say, fast forward to now, and just how much that has happened. I mean, do you still look at it and look back and go, wow, like, oh my goodness, all of this has happened since then?
It has been a big 20 years, you know, for those listeners that remember that period. Often there's conversation, you know, tech moves so fast, the world's moving so fast. But if we just take a moment and rewind, even just 20 years, you know, the availability of there were no smartphones, there were no apps, there was no social media, and certainly there was no AI, of which to speak, which is our next wave of innovation that's starting to come into our lives. So a huge amount has happened, and that's the nature of the time we're living in. You know, it's a time of great change, and hopefully with this book and with the talk that I'm going to give at UEA, I plan to, you know, just share some perspective on what has been unfolding and how people can, you know, get some simple handles to think about it.
And talk me through the like button there, because you were part of this. So what was your role in that early development? How did it come about?
Yeah, so the first company that I worked for was called Yelp, and I was working directly for the two co-founders right at the start. So I was the first employee, and Yelp is a review site, a local review site in the United States. But back then, of course, it was just an idea. And in the first year or so of rolling out this site, we were trying to make it easier for people to share compliments with each other. So you'd write a review about a local business, like a restaurant or a bar, and then some of these reviews were so funny. I mean, the writers were just, some of them were hilarious and really entertaining. And so, you know, there's this instinct of like, I want to compliment that person in some way, but there was no easy mechanism to do that. And I was designing the front end and an interface at the time, and our co-founder was like, could we make it simpler to send a compliment? It's too many clicks, right? You have to click something, you have to write a message, you have to save the message, you have to send the message. It's all too complicated. Could we make a simple mechanism using JavaScript where with one click the user could say give thanks of some sort, give acknowledgement, but stay on the page. And so that day, from start to finish, we had the idea in the morning. He asked me to come up with some designs for it. And then by the end of that day, we had launched the feature. And we came up with three buttons: useful, funny, cool. And we were the first people to ever put one-click emotional reactions on a piece of web content, and the first people to ever put multiple emotions as an option to respond to something. And we moved on. And it was just, we were just trying to solve a problem that day. We didn't think twice about it. And ever since, I've seen this thing, this concept, you know, gain hold.
It has been a bit of a beast, let's be honest. I mean, now you can react to, you know, if someone messages me, you know, earlier, like my husband says, do you want a free Bentos pie? And I just put no and used a sick emoji. Like, the way this has escalated now, it's basically communication. I mean, it's really taken off, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You know, those of you listening can think about how many times you've pushed these buttons today. You know, we're talking, sometimes it used to be just a thumbs up and a like, but now you can choose these different emotional reactions, whether you're using WhatsApp or Instagram or various products, right? All these digital products now have some way of doing this. But rewind 20 years and that did not exist. There was no way on the internet for you to react to content in that way. And, you know, I spent 4 years with my co-author Martin Reeves researching this topic, and it's been fascinating. We didn't plan to spend that long. We were just trying to write an article, but it turned into this huge adventure for us in researching it. And our research shows that these buttons are now clicked 50 billion times a day, which is an astounding number. And so it's become part of our lives. It's become part of our communication. And yet no one's really ever stopped to say, where did this thing come from? How does it affect us? How does it work on our dopamine circuits? What's the history? What's the pre-digital history of this thing? So I suppose that's what we're trying to do. Just taking a moment to help people take a step back and say, oh yeah, this thing exists, and where did it come from?
And I think it's what fascinates me with it is how it's sort of, it is almost like psychology now, of how we want that validation. You send a funny video to your friends and you expect the reactions, don't you? Or you send a nice message to someone and you expect them to heart it or to like it. And it's almost sort of doing things now for that validation in a kind of weird way, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And so it forced us to take a look at what is it tapping into? Because nothing is that popular without it tapping into something very deep about us as people. And there are many aspects to this, but one of them that I found very interesting to research and learn more about is the fact that humans are wired for a sort of social learning, right? Like, one of the things that actually distinguished us as species is that we can learn from each other. So instead of us having to make the same mistakes, right, which other animals do, we're able to learn, watch each other and say, I should not eat those berries, mm-hmm. right? Or that's how I, you know, make a flint, you know, to use as a spear or something, right? So we can pass on this kind of knowledge. And we're wired, it turns out, to learn from people and want to learn from people who are slightly smarter than us, slightly more attractive than us, you know, slightly more experienced than us. And so we have a preference for what's called a mild hierarchy, right? We don't want to learn from people that are so far ahead of us, we can't relate to them, but we want to learn from people that are slightly ahead of us. And I think that one of the things the liking taps into is it starts to show us in a digital format who is perhaps slightly ahead of us, who should we be aspiring to learn from.
And you know, to be able to sort of work in Silicon Valley, which I think for most of us normal people feels like this kind of utopia, really, because you see documentaries about it, you might see sort of the odd thing on social media. What was that like to actually be a part of?
Well, yeah, it's been 20 years now that I've been working in Silicon Valley in one way or another and living there. I think that, again, taking the sort of, you know, big picture perspective, there are times in history where there's a concentration of people that are making change. You know, during the Renaissance, it was Florence, right? And so I loved studying Florence. I still do. It's like such an incredible time where people were coming up with things like perspective and different ways of painting and representation and mathematics and inventing flying machines. And, you know, it was just like this, Florence was this hub of creativity. And so throughout history, we've had these pockets around the world. And right now, Silicon Valley is undoubtedly one of them and has been for maybe two or three decades, maybe a bit longer. There are many of these kinds of hubs around the world, and they each, specialize in different things. But it's one of those communities where, like, pretty magical things happen. And when I arrived in 2003, there was not much happening with the web. You know, as I said earlier, like it kind of, there was a bit of a downturn in activity. And so there were maybe 50 to 100 people that were working on new web stuff in 2003. Which sounds like an incredibly small number. Now it would be, you know, in the hundreds of thousands, maybe millions. But it was a small enough number where we could actually kind of all know each other. And there was a guy that used to host a monthly meetup at his little old Victorian apartment in San Francisco. And we used to show up there. So looking back, you know, I was, you know, fortunate to be part of this tiny little community and one of the only outsiders really to that community, with the founders of Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and these various products that we now kind of use daily. But it was kind of coming out of this tiny little pocket that existed in the early 2000s in San Francisco.
And to now sort of go back to the UEA for a special lecture, I mean, how are you feeling about that? Because that must be sort of a weird kind of moment in life when you do go back and deliver to the place you studied at.
It does feel like a very special event, I have to say. I studied at UEA, and one of the things that's funny to me looking at it and approaching it is I absolutely hated public speaking. I was so nervous about it. I'd never done it throughout my life. And part of my degree program is that you have to sometimes stand up in front of the class and present your ideas or present a short essay or something. And I was always terrified, you know, standing up in front of people. And the last thing I presented at UEA would have been like one of these moments where, you know, my mouth dried up and I was, you know, absolutely petrified about being in front of people. And it's over time and through my work, I've had to get used to communicating to people in groups and eventually in large audiences. And now I really enjoy it. But just the very fact that you can progress and something like that is interesting to me, you know. And then of course I'm going to have friends and family in the audience, and it's the first time that I've ever given a talk where I have people that know me from, you know, my childhood onwards. So it's going to be a very different kind of thing. The lecture is open to the general public, so this is not just for people associated with UEA. It's not designed for people that are working in technology. It's very much a free public lecture, and yeah, really honored to be doing it.
And of course, I think you're going to run sort of one-to-one sessions as well with some students there as well. Do you think we're at a point now where, you know, the potential we had sort of back in the early noughties with what the web could be, do you think we've still got that now? And what's that future going to be for them, do you think?
Yeah, it will be interesting. I'll be doing some one-to-one sessions with students from the School of Computer Science, the School of Business, and also from the School of Literature and Language, because there's some interest from them in how to apply AI in this next phase of learning as well. So it will be fun. That's the following week. I'll be doing these one-to-one sessions with students and in small groups. And, you know, it's easy to look back at a period and say the big ideas have happened. And I've seen this play out, right? Like after Google, you know, like in the late 90s, it was like, oh, the big things have happened. And you look at it now and you see, you know, Tesla is a multi-trillion dollar company started after that. Facebook is a multi-trillion dollar company after that. Even the idea that anything could exist that was that big was outrageous 20 years ago. So what I've learned over time is that there is no shortage of big ideas. There is no shortage of potential to create technology that can make a difference. And that's what I'm most interested in, is building things that can make a difference for the future. And, you know, we have a whole new generation at UEA who will no doubt be thinking about what their contributions can be. And the big ideas are still to come.
Tell us about the book then. What is the name of it? Because I'd love to give that a plug as well, because I just find it all absolutely fascinating. So tell me more about the book.
So the book is called Like, The Button That Changed the World. And if you see it in a shop, it's just an obnoxious bright green color with a huge thumb on the front. So you can't miss it. And yes, it came out in May. It's published by Harvard Business Press from the US, but it is available around the world. And yeah, the talk is going to be inspired by the sort of research that came out of the book.